behind the operator and watched as the bus backed up. He didn't think that was a good sign. Shadows lining the opposite bank crept back behind their cars, sensing the lull in the return fire. There they stayed low and gathered strength. "Follow me," Collie ordered and ran past him. Gus did just that. The last thing he saw before taking off was the mindless who'd fallen into the lake, clawing their way to shore. Collie withdrew some 20 meters before ducking behind the corner of a small green cottage. Gus stopped beside her, pushing her back a step, and slammed his upper body against the clapboard wall. "Stay low and out of sight," she told him. "I know," Gus grated. "I've been shot at before." Collie replaced her magazine with a slap and a good luck tickle. Gus peeked around the corner, scanning the bridge. Cars and trucks were now in reverse, spinning jets of dirt into the air. The far shore was a mess of dead rides and exhaust, but shapes moved within that mess. Of the islanders, they were either dead or nowhere in sight.
"Collie."
"Yeah."
"I think we're the only ones left."
Collie pulled him back and took the corner. She stuck out half a head and glanced about. A second later, she withdrew and pointed to a trail cutting between a pair of cottages and disappearing into the forest. There, one man waited and waved, urging them to follow.
"That Davis?" Collie asked.
Gus checked.
"Yeah, looks like him."
"So much for defending the homeland," Collie said, and stopped right there.
Motors were revving up again.
"I gotta take care of that bridge," she said.
"How?"
As an answer, she opened the flap of her breast pocket. Gus winced at the sight of the golf ball-sized grenade. Another bout of collapsing metal echoed over the lake's surface, followed by a short shriek of hinges and an earth-shaking clang as if an enormous manhole cover had crashed onto the ground. A surge of engines then, and a gravelly spewing of crushed stone followed. Gus stood next to Collie and peeked around the corner. One of the mindless, dripping water, stood in the very spot he and Collie had just vacated upon the grassy ridge. The zombie spotted him immediately and charged, waterlogged clothing flapping as it ran. Gus took a two-handed aim and squeezed off three shots before one bullet blew apart the thing's head, not 20 strides from the cottage. He was about to speak when Collie yanked him back. A squall of crossbow bolts slammed into the cottage hard enough to rattle wood. One bolt punched through the thin clapboard with a shiver. Several more blew past the corner, needling the very spot where Gus had been standing a second earlier. More missiles sped onwards, ending their killer flights in the other cottage walls, trees, and bouncing off rocks. The sound of one engine alone rose and overpowered the motorized chaos beyond.
"This way," Collie said. "Watch your ass and watch my back."
Gus would do just that. They hurried around the back of the cottage, ignoring the frantic waves from Davis. They stopped at the corner of the home where they had a better view of the bridge's closed gates on the island side. That mighty engine flared again, and a speeding mass entered the tunnel with a jarring crackle and crunch of wood. The vehicle raced along the interior like a speeding torpedo, the sound amplified by the enclosed space.
"They're going to ram the gate," Collie said behind her lowered rifle.
No sooner had she spoken when a pickup with an attached snowplow smashed through the closed barrier. The gates blew outward, folding up and over the machine's hood in a spray of wood. Planks crumpled and were swished away like freed propellers. Slabs of debris fell from the rampaging truck as the driver fought for control. Lengths of wood bounced off the roof and flipped out of the box bed. The machine halted in the clearing with a spray of dirt, drawing up broadside in a swirl of dust. The truck huffed and smoldered, the front blade scratched and mean-looking, but far from finished, until Collie lobbed the grenade under the machine. The blast launched the truck skyward about 10 feet, lighting up the day in a frightening conflagration that both lifted and engulfed the frame in a fiery fist. The rig slammed back to earth with a 2-ton crunch of metal, the husk charred and burning. Tires blew out with ear-crackling bangs. Collie bared her teeth.
"We go now?" Gus asked, ready to run 5 minutes ago.
"Fuck no," she said, propping her rifle alongside the house. She dug out the other grenade. "One more of these bitches will take care of that bridge."
A zombie clambered up over the little cliff facing the lake, dripping water and savage because of it.
Gus sighted the thing and fired four shots before one round tore away the left side of its head in a brutal smear of color.
Collie, those fuckers are coming ashore.
Yeah, she said and cocked back her arm.
Ever tell you I kill at dunk tanks?
Not waiting for a reply, Collie stepped out around the corner and threw her second grenade as if it were a baseball being sent home from right field. The explosive bauble didn't fly down the throat of the bridge, however, but rather bounced a few feet short before wobbling inside and greeting a second oncoming vehicle, just as its headlights flared to life. The blast blew apart the bridge mouth, sending fragments and shingles both sideways and skyward in a storm cloud of destruction. Flame flashed and waved merrily for a searing split second. Gus glimpsed the car's grill go straight up before the sides of the bridge puffed outward. One shard of debris, a lightning bolt of metal or wood, he didn't know which, actually impaled a zombie through the head as it was running up over the nearby embankment. Then the resulting dust obscured everything.
Happy birthday, Collie said, a little breathless. Now we go.
18. All had been going well right up until the Islanders started firing back. Firing back with automatic weapons, no less, at which point the sound and fury of such a surprise cranked the head of the Vulture toward the prisoner called Carson. Trucks and cars surrounded the captured man, who was currently strapped to a forklift, his bare feet kept in place by duct tape. Vast amounts wrapped his forehead and naked torso as well. The leather had in fact used a complete roll on the mechanic. A red ball gag filled Carson's mouth, preventing him from talking. The exposed rubber was slick and dewy, and every now and again, snot streamers fired out from the man's nose as he released a breath. Carson didn't look well since being captured. He'd certainly lost color after they extracted information from him, information that detailed the location of the island village, the men and women living there, their professions, and their defenses, including the number of weapons. At no time did Carson say anything about automatic rifles or grenades. That angered the Vulture. The grim executioner wearing the bronze leather mask straightened. The bronze caught the stern look from the Vulture and he hefted a hammer. Carson's eyes bulged, his cheeks puffed as he struggled for breath. Whimpers laced the air. The bronze stepped in close where Carson's bare feet were taped to the forks. The toes had remained exposed for better access. Three of the little piggies on his left foot had been smashed into red pulp and now resembled flattened grapes. The mechanic had started talking after only one of his toes received the hammer, but the Vulture deemed the others necessary as punishment. Carson grunted and spewed more snot. He managed to thrash a little, but he was so bound by duct tape the struggle amounted to nothing more than muted twitches. The Vulture wondered what else the mechanic had forgotten to tell him. Kneeling at the leader's right knee, a half-naked meat puppet cleared his throat. The Vulture ignored the meat, and the nearby leather brought the enslaved individual to heel by pulling hard on his leash. The meat puppet croaked, unable to breathe, and settled down. That minor interruption quelled, the Vulture held up a hand, staying the bronze's hammer just a little longer. The leader then regarded the bridge's entrance. The bus reversed in a surge of horsepower, pulling back the makeshift ramp on its roof, the very ramp that had allowed the leather to bypass so many walls in the past. Two pickups replaced the bus, reversing until they were mere feet away from the weakened gates. Figures scrambled between the two vehicles, hooking chains and quickly getting clear. A hand chopped the air, and the truck spun dirt before yanking the gates off its hinges. The way to the island lay wide open. The rammer was given the signal to go, and the truck equipped with the snowplow entered the tunnel. The legions of the leather, armed with heavy crossbows, unleashed a wave of bolts at the island. The sight of that deadly sprinkle distracted the Vulture from Carson. The rammer smashed through the gates on the other side. The truck skidded to a stop in full view, seconds before the vehicle exploded and left the earth riding a geyser of flame. Blazing chunks of wreckage rained down, some smashing into the mindless flailing around in the water. That spectacle shocked several of the leather, freezing them where they stood. The Vulture, however, bristled with anger. Three shots rang out, informing the leader that some of the enemy still lived. The vulture motioned for three cars to enter the tunnel. He then signaled his lessers to prepare to advance. 100 fighters reloaded their crossbows, while 100 more readied axes, clubs, and spears. The ammunition of the old world had long since dried up, so the leather had adopted more primitive but just as effective weapons, preferring the medieval might of points and edged steel. They didn't mind revving engines of their machines, however, considering them the war chariots of a new age. The age of leather. The cars disappeared into the tunnel depths, and the vulture raised his hand, ready to unleash the army at his back. Carson had told them lies, as incredible as it was. The vulture would personally attend to his punishment. The far end of the bridge exploded in the same spectacular fashion as the rammer. The unexpected blast surprised them all once again, including the vulture, who had dropped into a crouch. He straightened and stared at the smoking wreckage, taking in the ribbons of flame and dense coils of smoke. The lead vehicle had been destroyed, perhaps even all three. Leather-clad figures soon entered the bridge's interior, hands shielding their faces. They entered the smoking aperture, coughing, yet forging ahead. A minute later, word came back. The bridge, while damaged, was still intact. Cars could not pass, but the leather could cross on foot. That pleased the vulture, who sensed a greater game afoot. The islanders, those remaining, were readying themselves for another attack, or worse, attempting to flee. The vulture suspected he'd been lied to once again. Organizing his thoughts, the leader was distracted by the unruly meat slab who had the gall to stand and tear off his mouth gag. "That's the same shooter," the meat gasped before the leather holding onto the leash pulled hard, transforming the words into a pain-filled grunt. Red-faced and grimacing, the meat dropped to his knees. Three lessers wielding pipes and bats moved in to deliver punishment. The vulture stopped them with a hand. "Gah!" the meat panted, once again permitted the privilege of breathing. He clawed at the leash, granting himself a little more slack. The vulture waited. "That shooter, that sniper," the meat slab managed. I bet he's the same guy who shot up my crew. Those grenade blasts? Bet there's only two, if it's the same guy he took them from our trailer back at the recharging station. Along with the merch, the trailer had a booby trap. Two grenades, I know. Rigged it myself. I'll bet my life it's the same fuck puppy who chased me off. Same crew, even. Only two grenades on that rig, though, and he used them just now. But they got nothing left, except the rifle. The vulture waited. Same person, the meat puppet, once known as Top Gun, grunted while holding his throat. He steadied himself and considered the leather surrounding him. Just wanted to tell you, that's all. That should count for something. The vulture absorbed the information. It did indeed count for something. He signaled the leather to pounce on the prisoner. They brutalized the puppet until he collapsed, continued brutalizing him into silence. The vulture ignored the violence at his back. He looked to the rear, sighted one lesser, and issued commands by hand. The lesser signaled back. The bus pulled to one side of the bridge, allowing passage onto the island. The air filled with a loud rumble and squeal of a semi-truck, one of two in this war party. The huge machine reversed and angled its load toward the bridge. Several of the leather marched alongside the approaching trailer doors. Doors that were chained shut. 19. Collie and Gus pounded over a wide path of crushed stone. They raced deeper into the island's sub-temperate zone, which resembled a dense rainforest. Fir trees crowded them in, their long branches resembling fish bones. Those boughs quickly hid the shoreline. Velvet green drizzled the larger rocks between the trees, while spicy fir and fresh earth scented the air. Except Gus couldn't smell any of that.
"Jesus Christ," he barked, his face puckered in disgust. "I smell like sick donkey piss."
"Maybe it isn't donkey piss,"
Collie replied while running and patting down her tactical webbing.
Well, shit.
What?
Only two magazines left. That includes the fresh one I slapped home.
Gus didn't like the sound of that. He knew she had only brought five magazines, since their original plan was to restock at Whitecap. The remainder for her rifle was in their pickup, abandoned back at the bridge.
I got four spares for mine, he huffed. The way you shoot, you'll need them.
Gus scowled. That one hurt. Mayhem scorched the air back toward the bridge, the combined voices of hundreds of zombies howling at the sun.
We don't have much time, Collie said.
The two saw Davis up ahead. He was standing by a directional signpost sprouting a dozen arrows in different directions.
This way,
he said, waving them through as he skipped into a full run.
Where's this point?
Gus asked between sharp breaths, hoping to God he didn't develop a stitch in his side, or leg cramps. Davis pointed.
Up ahead. They killed Garrett.
And everyone else back there, Gus said.
Why are they doing this?
Talk later, Collie advised the Islander.
How far to go?
10-minute run, Davis said.
If you can do it.
10 minutes, Gus blurted, suddenly very much aware of the hot buzzing in his foot.
Yeah, 10 minutes.
Where are your cars?
Back there,
Davis panted as he ran.
But Sarah and Rich had a pickup and a car parked on the other side of the cottages, in case something like this happened. They drove on with the others. I stayed back to get you, in case you got lost.
The wild screaming of hundreds cut through the surrounding forest, urging Gus to run faster. Davis and Collie glanced over their shoulders, but Gus did not. He knew what was back there. Just ahead, in the shade of a singular maple, a white boulder with a pink happy face spray-painted upon it came into view. There, the path split off into three directions. Davis took the right. Gus and Collie kept pace, their feet pounding over crushed stone. The shrieking grew behind them, sounding even more intense in Gus's ears. The thickening uproar raised the hairs on his neck. They were exposed, way too exposed, and he felt far too rusty to evade an army of deadheads. The dense forest made it difficult to see the path behind them. Gus really didn't want to see, but like anyone trying to outrun a flash flood, it was counterintuitive not to look. And that ravenous wailing motivated him to redline it, tapping into whatever speed his nearly 50-year-old carcass could muster. Davis and Collie had a good 10-step lead on him, and Collie was carrying the rifle.
Run! She yelled back at him.
Red-faced and feeling like a boiler about to explode, Gus chugged along, instinct telling him to glance once again over his shoulder.
Nothing. No one. But goddamn, he could hear them just fine. Just through the trees. And they were closing in from damn near everywhere behind him.
Where are we going? Collie asked between breaths.
Other side of the island, Davis said. Secret escape route.
A road?
Not quite.
Not quite, Gus wanted to bark.
But he didn't.
Couldn't.
He was trying to keep up while saving a little gas for the inevitable sprint for the finish.
Then what is it? Collie asked. And don't say boats.
I won't, Davis answered.
The forest thinned out, revealing a pathway leading to a large dormitory. An open field gradually came into view, where a playground, complete with a set of monkey bars, ropes, and slides, waited to be used. The crushed stone underfoot became a trail of dried mud. They pushed up over a series of sunbaked mounds that killed Gus's calves and got him gasping. Sweat left him in sparkling sheets. It wasn't fair. He lost all that weight, all of it. And he was still on the verge of dropping dead. All the while, his foot crackled with its familiar pins and needles.
Move, Gus! Collie shouted.
Moving, he got out. I'm moving!
A single voice released a stream of insane gibberish, startling him badly. With a quick double take, Gus glimpsed a body crashing through the underbrush. One arm reached up before the torso disappeared from sight entirely, as if swallowed up by a sinkhole. That was it for him. He forgot about his burning foot and squeezed out a little more speed. He then glimpsed more ghostly outlines running through the bushes.
Run! Davis yelled.
We almost there?
Collie shouted. But Davis wouldn't answer. The mindless cut through the undergrowth, pushing, fighting through as if the forest was some great dastardly webbing. Thick branches clotheslined a pair of zombies, their feet leaving the ground as if caught in a windstorm. Some tripped and fell, toppling others behind them.
Despite the natural barrier of the surrounding woods, the undead stampeded forward, heedless of the boughs whipping at their faces, and slowly catching up to the three fleeing runners. Collie glanced back at their pursuers, and unless she was exercising on the sly, Gus didn't think she was operating at the best of her physical ability, and he certainly wasn't sure if she could fire that automatic cannon while on the run. Then it hit him. Davis was running along a snaking, curving path that darted in and out of clumps of trees and half-hidden cabins. The mindless, ironically enough, were charging in a straight line. And gaining. As if sensing that thought, Davis suddenly yelled, "This way!" He turned left, leaped over a hedge, and bounded towards a large building looming beyond the brush. A signpost flashed by, pointing to the dining hall. The place didn't look secure at all. Two floors, connected on the outside by a grand set of stairs that led to an outdoor deck where hot sunlight pooled in the summertime. The walls consisted of nothing but a series of squared cookhouse windows from one corner to the next. Several handcrafted picnic tables and concrete barbecue pits dotted the lawn around the building, eagerly waiting for campers to return.
"Shortcut!"
Davis wheezed and ran past the tables right up to the main doors. He pulled them open and left them that way for Collie, who was two strides behind him. She halted on the threshold, her frame heaving from the run. She glanced back to check on Gus, and he noticed the unchecked shock upon her winded face. He looked over his shoulder and wished he hadn't.
Mindless. Zombies, Moes, Deadheads, Gimps, and Meatbags. Names that were all fine and dandy descriptors, but Mindless truly described the pursuing mob bursting through the evergreen thickets. Ragged and torn clothing covered their infected hides, and some didn't have anything on at all. They charged the dining hall in fleshy gushes, resembling jets of skin-colored water punching through a failing dam. Meaty lines of fury, their faces lit up with gluttonous hatred, their hooked fingers swiping at the air. The lead runners reached the outer edges of the picnic tables with ease and jumped over them, but they didn't descend as gracefully. Some crashed in a painful twist of limbs, faces clapped wood. One outstretched arm hit the deck altogether wrong, and a red spear of shattered bone popped free of the skin surrounding it. Collie started shooting. Light tore into the foremost runners. A chest ripped open in a great explosion of red and white. A head got half sheared away, while the body underneath continued to run for a split second. An arm blew off, savagely spinning the creature around before Collie took his skull off with one shot. The rest, however, continued to charge, and in the face of that fearless onslaught, Gus ran for his life. He plunged through the doorway and crashed into a structural post. Collie withdrew, allowing Davis to slam shut the other doors. The camper then immediately twisted the locks at the base and at the top. Outside, the infected wave of bodies rushed the building.
"This way," Davis gasped.
He rushed through an aisle between two great sections of tables and chairs. Gus labored after him, glimpsing the interior. Vending machines flashed by, grand totem poles of lacquered wood, and a huge stage at the far end. A banner hung over the platform which read, "Camp Red Wolf welcomes you." The mindless crashed into the door with an explosive bulge of wood and windows, but the frame held. Arms thrust through the glass in spurts of blood and falling shards. A couple of heads slammed into the surface, rattling the barrier. More mindless heaved up behind those initial few, squashing them against the windows and main doors in a steam press of meat and momentum. Hands slapped glass, smashing through the barrier like cheap cymbals. And over their screaming heads and jostling shoulders, more mindless were rushing forward. Collie backed up a few steps and unleashed a full killing spray across the windows. Sunlight bounced off the flying shards of glass. Heads burst apart in technicolor spurts. Whole torsos slunk from sight as if slurped down by the earth.
"Come on!"
Davis yelled from the other side of the dining hall. Collie ceased firing and ejected the spent magazine.
"Just thinning them out."
Not that the mindless cared. She turned, leaving behind a writhing wave of clawing hands and contorted faces. The sight reminded Gus of the early days. Zombies climbed through the shattered windows. Some of them hooked themselves on the glass teeth, opening their guts in shocking clumps that spilled forth. Davis held Gus's shoulder and pushed him through another set of doors.
"Watch them from the other side of the lake if you want," he said.
Kali exited the building just as Davis slammed the doors shut.
Can't lock these, he gasped, his face shining with sweat. We're almost there.
Didn't you say that a few minutes back? Gus demanded, very much out of breath.
He lumbered into a run regardless, through a near-identical setup of tables and chairs. His left foot felt like it was bearing down on an electric buzzer with every step. Kali was behind him, straining with her own exertion.
I said that, Kali corrected him. Never did get an answer, and we sure as fuck better not be heading to a pier.
No pier, Davis managed as they put distance between them and the dining hall, bolting through a fine gazebo and a well-maintained garden.
Docks are that way.
He flailed in a direction far to the right of where they were going.
So where?
Gus started, but Davis, shockingly spry for a man who looked to have the living shit kicked out of him, ran on ahead, leaving Gus and Kali trailing behind. Noise of the mindless smashing through the dining hall receded, but to the left, more of the zombies scrambled into view. Davis cut off the path and hopped over a hedge, heading back into the woods. Gus and Kali followed, except Gus belly flopped flat onto his face and groaned into the grass. By the time Kali flipped him over and hauled him to his feet, Davis had threaded his way up and over an incline, a dark outline traveling through a shade that got Gus thinking about thatched beach umbrellas. He and Kali raced after the Islander, over hard-packed dirt generously sprinkled with green and orange needles and other forest debris. Gus hurried at his best speed, which was failing fast. The hill leached his strength and injected fire into his calves. Sweat stung his eyes and fell in a steady patter. He made it to the top of the hill, however, just behind Kali, who didn't let him lag too far behind. They reached the crest, where Gus lurched to a stop and gawked at Davis. The man was as lithe as a deer, descending the hilltop and darting between thick trunks. The Islander sprinted toward a pristine white beach, the sand shimmering in the midday sun. The smell of fresh water cut across Gus's face, and between the evenly spaced trees, waves sparkled. Davis cut left.
Come on,
Kali ordered, leaving boot prints as she started down the hill. Gus filled his lungs and hurried after her, letting his momentum do most of the work. Davis bounded along a wet track of shoreline, his frame winking in and out among the last few trees. He waved and pointed toward the open lake. Gus saw them.
You gotta be fucking kidding, he croaked.
There, strung out in a curious zigzag in the middle of the water, were about a dozen Islanders. They had already made it more than three-quarters of the way to the far shoreline, their figures clearly visible against the huge backdrop of woodland on the other side. There were no posts, no guide ropes, and nothing to indicate a path from Gus's vantage point. But of course that couldn't be right. Still, the summer camp Islanders hurried along. Little Monica included, still clinging on to Bruno, easily identified by his pirate cap. A few of those faces turned and spotted Davis racing along the beach.
This way,
Kali urged Gus, and she bounded after the Islander with renewed energy. Legs damn near dead, chest close to bursting, and eyes bugging, Gus practically ran into a tree and placed a bearded cheek to its trunk. He gawked at the operator as she cut through that darkened landscape, traversing an angle meant to catch up with the fleeing Islanders. The voices of the mindless reached him. Sucking down another tank full of air, Gus detached himself from the tree and floundered after Kali. He ducked under a low branch and almost fell flat on his chest, but after frantically pinwheeling his arms and screaming, "Jesus!" he somehow managed to remain vertical. Every footfall stung. Every breath stretched and squeezed his ribs like a withered accordion. The smell of water gave him an extra shot of juice, and those scintillating waves were blinding. In short time, he charged onto the beach and nearly toppled, boots kicking up sand. Kali's improvised path had brought them closer, however. Just 10 feet away, the beach became a black mass of rocks that sloped underneath the water. Davis stood in the lake some 15 feet offshore, waves lapping at his ankles. He urged them to hurry. The other Islanders had nearly reached the other side.
Stay inside the markers,
Davis ordered as loud as he dared and pointed underfoot.
And watch your step. It gets slippery.
Kali was already wading into the lake, her camos soaking to the knee. Gus staggered to the rocks, swayed upon them like a drunken Atlas, and couldn't spare the wind to swear. And he really wanted to swear, to just light up the air around him with a few choice firecrackers of shitbag dismay. He couldn't, however. He was that spent. He was a kettle that had evaporated all his water, while the smoldering fire under his ass threatened to melt him whole. The lake would kill him. This he knew inherently. Then he saw the rocks. Two strings of beach rocks resembling gigantic pearls slipped underneath the water, marking a trail just a little thinner than a sidewalk that vanished in the waves. Kali was already strides ahead upon the narrow trail. She halted and half-turned, enough to shoot him a look of move your ass. Orders received, Gus sloshed into the lake and stepped onto the flat mantle of rock underfoot. He stayed on course, still amazed at the hidden walkway.
No more than 2 or 3 feet across, he figured.
Considering the size of the surrounding lake, it was like stepping onto a slick tightrope of slate. Outside the submerged markers, the edges dropped away, and the water took on that gauzy, forbidding tint of unknown depths. The water sloshed at Gus's ankles. At times it rose to his knees. The day focused its glare upon the lake surface, the October sun throwing down a feverish heat. The air was cleaner, however, fresher, cutting through the stink of his piss-stained clothing. Just sucking it down rejuvenated Gus a little. He divided his attention between watching where he walked and Kali and Davis forging ahead. The path veered one way and then the other. One wrong step and a person would drop off into watery oblivion. Slogging through the lake, however, was worse than racing through the woods. The grind was harder, and Gus discovered he was moaning. Then he heard the commotion behind him. Kali glanced back. She then turned around completely and crouched to a knee. She brought up her rifle. The screaming intensified, prompting Gus to look behind him. That was his undoing. Practically exhausted, he stepped onto a rock which slid out from underfoot in a startling split-second yank-and-tip sensation. Gus went lopsided, arms splayed as he splashed down on his back. Pressure squeezed his chest as a galaxy of bubbles exploded about his face. He twisted, steeping himself even deeper. His fingers grazed the edge of the rock mantle, the very one he walked upon only a second earlier. Then nothing. And that was the most frightening part of being dunked, that slow-motion sense of sinking. He released a watery "grrr" and pawed for land that was no longer there, while sheets of angelic light shimmered around him. The mantle's edge receded into the gloom the deeper he sank. Instinct took over. Gus fluttered his arms and kicked his feet. He breaststroked, zeroing in upon the imposing slab that was the mantle. He swam toward that murky wall, his clothing as clingy and troublesome as a straitjacket. His panic spiked. His brain demanded air, but his mouth and lungs refused. He then touched rock and scrambled for a handhold, then toeholds. He grabbed the painted rocks, and they came free of the mantle's edge with an underwater rattle and quickly sank. Gus sank with them for 6 inches before he was able to worm his way back up. He latched onto the submerged ledge, on the verge of sucking down water, his lungs desperate for anything. He kicked, pressing his chest to the mantle, slapping an arm across the path. Gus lifted his face towards the shimmering surface inches away. He clawed for a cranny, a crack, anything to hoist himself up, but found nothing. He grunted in panicked frustration, releasing a jet of bubbles before his eyes. Air. Bright, sparkling air was right above him, right there. But he couldn't get any closer. His waterlogged boots pumped dreamily against the lower rock, unable to get a toehold. The goddamn mantle was as smooth as a baby's ass. With his remaining strength, he lifted himself in a last-ditch effort and rose almost enough to kiss the surface, before sinking back. Gus screamed, and his lungs truly started shrieking, telling him to quit fucking around, to get his ass up on that shelf before they started taking on water in great convulsive gulps. Except Gus couldn't get his ass any higher. He'd blown through whatever gas he had in the tank. His brain joined the swelling mutiny of his lungs, and his mouth was a second away from opening the hatches. The light overhead crystallized, shattering into sparkles, then darkened. An arm harpooned the water, and a hand fastened onto his shoulder. Kali pulled him up, and Gus broke the surface with an uncontrollable gasp and sputter. I got you, she said, still holding onto her assault rifle.
I got you.
Gus barked a short cough and stabilized himself. His ears roared and his face dripped. His vision was a wet smear.
Collie crouched beside him, facing the camper's island.
Mindless.
The zombies charged into the lake, splashing forward like mad children. Some went to their chests and quickly sank out of sight. Some wiped out in spectacular fashion, going tits over ass before splashing down. A few managed to locate the secret walkway, and they stayed upon it for only a few strides before the path took an irregular turn, whereupon the mindless immediately disappeared underwater. A few hands clawed at the air just above the surface before sinking out of sight.
You good? Collie asked.
Yeah, Gus sputtered, and he got to his feet. Think my balls are waterlogged.
She pulled him away. They staggered along, staying inside the white lines, sloshing toward the shore. The path continued to zig and zag, and those turns saved them, as the mindless, true to their new name, paid no heed to the markers and disappeared into unknown depths. A frenzied splashing cut the air, along with the water-choked cries of the zombies as they sank in deep water.
Like a pissed-off marine world back there, Gus gasped.
Save your breath, Collie said.
Davis waited for them on the shore, and when Gus released Collie and stood on his own, he realized how quiet it had become. Quiet enough for him to turn around and see what was transpiring on the water. A light wind rustled the surface, but of the mindless, there was no sight. The lake had sucked them down and kept them there.
20.
This way, Davis said.
He disappeared into the forest, leading them along a narrow path cloaked in a comfortable autumn shadow. Clothes dribbling and boots squishing, Gus squeezed his beard free of water and followed. Wet and wretched and all but depleted of strength, it took everything to put one foot before the other. Every step was a wet cement spatter that threatened to pull him down. The shivers grabbed him then, adding to his misery. He staggered along, grabbing at limbs that might support him, hoping to God he didn't stumble. If he did, he'd fall flat on his soggy ass, and that would be that. There'd be no getting back up. So he wobbled and swayed through that dense patch of woodland, following a rough trail marked by axe and boot prints.
You okay? Collie asked.
Huh?
I said you okay.
Gus nodded.
'Cause you look like shit.
I'm fine, he muttered with a wet scowl.
He pointed back toward the lake.
They could be walking along the bottom right now.
The MBs? Collie asked.
Yeah.
Won't be long gone before they get to the surface. That right, Davis?
That's right.
At that exact moment, Gus's body ceased to work below the waist. He lurched to a stop and grabbed his knees, unable to go any further.
Oh, Jesus. I gotta stop. Right here. I'm about to drop.
Collie let him be. Wet and winded, but otherwise fine, she placed her back against a tree and gradually sank to a knee, her rifle lowered. In the shade, her sunglasses gleamed, speckled with water droplets. Gus gasped, spat, and dripped where he stood. With a pained groan, he slowly collapsed on his ass, his knees crackling as he did so.
Jesus, Collie grimaced. Does that hurt?
Red-eyed and saturated, he shook his head.
Sounds awful.
He smiled weakly, oh, so grateful for the few seconds of rest. He realized he'd planted his backside in a cozy bed of wildflowers. His hands were in what might have been tea leaves. He studied the vegetation briefly, wary of poison ivy and pissed-off snakes. Either one would be a fishhook in his ball sack at this point in the game. Seeing neither, however, he relaxed and laid back on his elbows, lowering himself like a broken robot.
Just give me a minute, he panted. Just a minute. That's all I need.
Don't talk, Collie told him.
Davis?
Halfway up the hill, the islander's head perked up.
Yeah. Go catch up with your people. Tell them we're 2 minutes behind. And if I fire a long burst, don't wait for us. Got it?
He hesitated.
Got it. We have trucks 3 hills over.
3 clicks from here.
Trucks? Kali asked.
3 clicks? A horrified Gus blurted.
Yes, Davis answered. And yes.
Gassed up? She asked.
Yes, but not much of it.
3 clicks? Gus repeated,
positively aghast and staring at his soaking boots.
Fuck me gently. Couldn't you park them closer?
The closest road is 3 kilometers out. We're in deep woods here.
Oh, dear Jesus, Gus moaned, his head rolling.
Carry on, Kali said to Davis. We'll be there.
Davis got up, brushed himself off, and started up the hill. When the islander disappeared into the forest, Gus considered the trail behind them, twisted and lost in the tangles. Somewhere beyond that foliage, there were waters lapping at a rocky shoreline. Any second he expected one of those dead things to start wailing, announcing to the world that it had reached the other side. Kali shifted her rifle, the movement breaking his thoughts.
He's in better shape than me, Gus said in an exhausted voice.
The hell you talking about? She asked. You realize how far you've come? You just passed basic training, buddy. You're a goddamn Spartan is what you are. A human missile.
Gus smirked, knowing better. Still, a part of him enjoyed that. They stopped talking then, and in that meaningful lapse, they could hear Davis's footfalls over the hill.
Where'd they get them, Kali? Gus asked.
The meat bags?
Yeah.
The operator offered a tight smile.
Who knows? Thing is, they got them, and were able to stash them away somewhere, keep them out of the fucking daylight, or dip them in vats of moisturizer, I don't know.
They were runners.
They were.
Fresh as fucking daisies.
Kali nodded, they were that.
I mean, Gus tried to make sense of it all. Could they have, maybe, kept a head or two? Like that playpen, remember? The one filled with only heads?
Snapping, biting heads, she added.
Yeah, like that. Could some sick bastard have an undead head tucked away? Maybe saving the virus just to infect people? The ones they don't like? Or have no use for? And turn them into new gimps?
Kali thought it over.
Possible. There are some twisted puppies out there. And people are the last valuable resource around. Only water comes close. And pizza. Only need 2 brain cells to figure that out. Just a few things puzzling me about all that.
The piss bags?
That's one of them.
Gus sniffed himself.
I still stink. That's some rancid shit, even after the dip.
Kali checked herself as well.
Not as bad as before, but it's there. This might be trouble.
How so?
I'll tell you later, she said, and stood. You ready?
He was nowhere near ready, but he nodded all the same.
We gotta get to those rides, she told him. I'm not going to fucking walk all the way to Whitecap.
We're still going? Gus asked in surprise.
More than ever.
But what about Davis and Eva and company?
Like it or not, they come with us. I don't see a choice. And we gotta go right now because shit's getting really quiet over there and I don't like it.
She was right. Gus climbed to his feet, his knees crackling once again. It was embarrassing.
Sorry, he muttered.
Her sunglasses clear of clinging water, Kali flashed him a smile, bright and toothy.
Don't worry about it, babe.
Then she was hiking up the hill. Gus stood there for seconds, watching her go, and remembered to start breathing again. There was something feral in her smile that startled him, and he replayed and froze the image in his mind's eye. Only for a second, however, before he hoofed it after her. They caught up with Davis chugging over the second hill. He greeted them with an exhausted nod and pointed toward the crest.
The others, just over the hill, I can hear them.
Gus couldn't hear shit, but Kali was already moving past the islander.
Come on then, they only roughed up your face. You had scads of juice not 5 minutes ago. Everything caught up to me, Davis said.
They heard the survivors trudging through the bush before they saw them. As they closed the gap, Rich Trinidad came into view. The gunslinger walked along as a rearguard, one hand on a 9mm Beretta. His sombrero lifted as he detected the approaching three, but he didn't acknowledge them.
"Rich," Davis said and waved.
Trinidad didn't reply. The other islanders came into view then, though partially hidden by the forest. They turned at the sound of Davis's voice.
"Anyone coming after you?" Trinidad asked.
"Not yet." "That's going to change," Kali said.
"You figure?" Trinidad asked.
"Oh yeah," the operator said grimly. "How far do these stashed rides of yours?"
Trinidad appeared none too happy about the question, still suspicious of the newcomers.
"Still a ways to go," Davis answered for him.
The rest of the islanders were taking a break, seated along the trail. Eva was there, as well as the bespectacled Sarah. Then Gus found Corey and Bruno with Monica close by them.
"Get everyone marching,"
Kali said, striding past them all and heading for the front of the column.
"And watch our tails back there, Rich. This ain't over."
Gus shivered at the words. He didn't think it was over either. The sight of corpses struggling upon lazy waves stopped the vulture in his tracks. At his back was a sizable force of the leather, gathered along the shoreline and watching their leader. A dozen more waited upon the rocks leading to the underwater pathway. The vulture wasn't pleased about the escape route. He was even more displeased with Carson for withholding that crucial bit of information. The mechanic was being selective with what he knew. The vulture found that both admirable and infuriating. Even now, as dozens of the leather swarmed over the island searching for fresh meat, the vulture knew nothing would be found. Their quarry had fled. Across the lake. Water lapped at the black rocks. White markers gleamed beneath the water. The vulture turned to a lesser.
"Bring me Carson."
Several minutes later, a half dozen of the leather dumped the mechanic into the sand before the vulture. If the man appeared pitiful before, he was even more wretched now. Carson had been removed from the forklift and marched along until his wrecked feet could take no more, whereupon he was dragged by the arms over crushed stone and forest floor. Dirt and dust covered him, and his blood ran freely from dozens of visible cuts. Tatters of duct tape clung to his skin, the ends curled and speckled. The sinister bronze loomed over the tortured man. His hammer had been hooked upon his waist.
"You,"
the vulture said quietly, unmoved by the mechanic's injuries,
"have lied to us again."
Carson whimpered and shook his head with whatever strength remained. His wet cheeks fluttered around the ball gag. One of those cheeks had been split down the middle. The bronze reached for his hammer while one of the nearby leather yanked the gag free. Carson retched and bent over, only to be rudely straightened by his captors. One of his eyes was blinking badly as if irritated. He focused upon the vulture.
"You didn't tell us about this path," the vulture said.
"I forgot."
That unsettling mask didn't move.
"Liar,"
the vulture said softly, aiming a gun finger at the man. The bronze jerked his hammer free of his belt.
"I forgot,"
Carson yelled, his chest heaving.
"Where are they going?" the vulture asked.
"I don't know,"
the mechanic pleaded. He glanced fearfully at his potential executioner.
"Yes, you do."
"I don't."
The vulture clenched one hand into a fist. The leather fell upon Carson. The man screamed and struggled as they flattened him out upon the sand. Hands gripped his feet, arms, and steadied his head. He writhed until exhausted and then sobbed in trapped terror.
"You have no need of your legs for your work," the vulture quietly pointed out. "Where are they going?"
Carson squinted his good eye shut. His chest was scratched and bleeding as if he'd been pulled through a sock of barbed wire.
"Go fuck yourself,"
he finally snapped off, tapping into a reservoir of defiance.
"You bunch of goddamn parasitic cocksuckers. Go fuck yourselves. Guess what? We got a bunker over there. Poured it myself. Concrete walls a foot thick and looking down right where you come ashore on the other side. They're waiting for you right there now. ready to blow your fucking nuts off with firebombs and booby traps.
The leather didn't react. The bronze made no move to punish the prisoner for his outburst. The vulture remained impassive. Carson's good eye flicked from one captor to another.
That won't work, the vulture said flatly.
You go on across and see what won't work. The first unlucky piece of shit you send will get a bullet right between the eyes.
No, the vulture explained softly. You misunderstood. We're not going to kill you. You cannot provoke us into killing you. You cannot provoke me. We're going to keep you alive. I'm going to keep you alive. For a very long time. We will break you. Like we've broken others. Then you'll belong to the leather. And the dog tongue.
Carson's bruised features twisted in confused horror.
Now then, the vulture continued. Tell us everything about this crossing and what's on the other side. If you forget anything, if you keep back any details, you will be disciplined in such a way that you will never willingly deceive the leather again. We will crush your remaining toes, then your feet, your ankles.
The masked leader tilted in a show of careful thought.
Your knees and your hips. You don't need any of that to be useful to the leather.
A sweating, stinking Carson paled a few shades more and visibly swallowed. His head went slack upon his shoulders.
After that, it becomes costly, the vulture went on. And we may put aside the hammer for other, more penetrating tools.
At that, the bronze flashed a scalpel. He brought the surgical tool in close to the prisoner's nose and held it there.
Now then, the vulture said, what waits for us on the other side?
Carson talked. When he finished, the vulture turned to one of his lessers.
Bring the hounds.
Minutes later, a leather emerged from the forest handling leashes connected to the collars of three mindless. The zombie's hands were duct taped into fossilized balls the size of grapefruits, and leather masks covered their faces, except for a hole for their noses. The handler pulled back upon the leashes, forcing the three manhounds to heel, which they did with excited jerks and grunts. More figures emerged from the forest. The vulture waved the handler forward. The manhounds were whipped into motion. They splashed into the water, hot on the scent of the fleeing islanders. Dozens of the leather followed.
21. Gus and the others marched. They moved with exhausted energy, stumbling, reaching out for balance, dripping sweat, eager to reach the waiting vehicles. The ground was rough, uneven. Gus would call it a hard hike, but in reality it was a ball breaker. His chest and hips ached. His calves burned as if his veins were pumping lit gasoline. He didn't think there was a dry piece of cloth on him, and if he didn't get a drink of water soon, the dehydration would drop him like a bullet to the head. Three clicks didn't sound like much, until you actually marched it, and he knew if he lived to see tomorrow, it would be with one mighty sore ass. Garrett and Sarah Burton had the foresight to hack out a cross-country path through a rolling wilderness using axes, just in case. They also marked the path with those same beach rocks painted white. When they depleted their supply of those, they lashed a white bar of paint across a tree.
Sweet Jesus,
Gus muttered yet again as he topped what was supposed to be the third hill, and yet he could see nothing ahead except more goddamn forest. Dark clouds drifted overhead, and beneath that was an unbroken shag rug of backwoods as far as the eye could see. The afternoon was growing old, with only an hour or so left of daylight.
Believe it or not, Eva said, stopping beside him. There's a road down there. She pointed. Goes left to right and around that hill over there. Beyond that is a highway.
Thank Christ, Gus said. I could drop dead right here.
Eva appeared genuinely amused by that. She didn't look anywhere near as tired as Gus. None of the islanders did. He glanced around, hoping they'd reached the vehicles before dark, and settled upon Collie. She was forging down the slope, moving gracefully enough, but every now and again she would stop and arch her back. Taking a breath, he lumbered his way through the crowd to meet her. When he reached the operator, he greeted her with, "You okay?" Collie turned her sunglasses upon him.
"Yeah, why?"
"You look like you got a stick in your spokes or something."
"Ha! You wish. Just a little stiff is all. I'll be good in the morning. I haven't had to haul ass like this in a long time."
"I never had to haul ass like this."
"So you're having a good time?"
Gus answered that with a good-natured scowl. They stopped talking then and settled into a grind of placing one foot in front of the other. At the bottom of the hill, branches had been cut to create a wide corridor. They followed that across a shallow brook where they stopped and splashed themselves with water. Gus dropped to his knees, and seeing Sarah Burton drink from cupped hands, sucked down his share. A yell got his attention. It was distant, ghostly even, and didn't repeat. Water dripped from his beard as he strained to listen. Collie and Corey had also heard. The forest beyond the hills remained silent, but there was a growing sense of a secret just revealed.
"We better hurry," Rich Trinidad said with a glare. "They're coming."
Gus sensed it as well. Whoever they were running while the islanders were walking. That lit a fire under their collective asses. Sunlight flared briefly overhead as the small group double-timed it over uneven ground. Faces glanced back, scanning for pursuers, and seeing none. Gus knew they were back there. The mindless had found their way across the lake depths. Perhaps they'd sunk to the bottom and just kept on walking until they emerged wet and dripping on the other side. It wouldn't be too hard for the creatures to find them, as the stubborn stink of old man donkey piss still hung off their clothing. Gus knew he was on the verge of dropping any second. He thought he'd been tired before, but that was a lie. That was only the borderline of a very real red zone, and his inner needle was edging closer to scarlet. When he reached the end of the meter, his internal engine would explode, just burst asunder from the pressure, and crimple into an ugly rose with dripping petals. When that happened, he'd simply collapse, face down and ass up, and snort dirt until whatever was chasing them caught up and... The woods opened into a narrow clearing shaded by tall maples where two long-bed pickups waited. One red, one black, the paint shiny and surprisingly clean. The tailgates were already lowered, and red gas cans had been stashed and secured by rope. The trucks were parked on the shoulder of a single-lane dirt road. The sight of the vehicles gave Gus a badly needed shot of energy. Cries of relief erupted from the rest of the group as well. The islanders flung open doors and lurched inside, squeezing themselves into the plush interiors. The remainder climbed into the rear. Gus located Collie, who lay on her belly in a box bed, her rifle aimed at the tree line. Gus hopped aboard, placed his back up against the left side, and flopped his legs over hers. He drew his gun and held it to his chest.
"See anything?" he gasped.
"Not yet."
The trucks started up, and Gus knew, just knew, the whole fucking forest was about to be crawling. The undead would leap out as the trucks pulled away, their fingers hooked and seeking to latch onto the sides. Some would be screaming, some wouldn't have the capacity to scream, but all would be ravenous. His mind's eye already glimpsed those warped faces with glazed but starving eyes. Except nothing of the sort happened. The black truck tore off with an 8-cylinder growl and a spray of dirt and then bounced over the knobby landscape. 2 long seconds later, the red truck followed. The road unspooled behind them in a great earth-colored ribbon, rolling left and right, then back again, sometimes straightening out before disappearing behind a curtain of branches. The truck jostled Gus, but he held onto his Glock, eyes narrowed, waiting, his finger resting against the guard. Collie was splayed out underneath him, poised and ready. He watched the road as it rolled away, the gloom pierced by occasional shots of daylight. There was a peal of tire on asphalt, a screeching of rubber, and then the box bed jumped a foot. Gus landed hard, scraping his spine and shoulders against the box wall. The pain took a long time to ebb away. Evening sky loomed overhead, and it took him that long to realize they were on the open road, racing toward wherever. The important thing was that they had escaped the mindless unscathed. They were free and clear. As if thinking the same thing, Kali rolled onto her side and placed her rifle on the flatbed. She relaxed next to the weapon and glanced over her shoulder. A relieved smirk hung off one corner of her mouth. Gus smiled back. The little convoy streaked along a two-lane road, the countryside buzzing by in a scream of wind. All the while, Gus watched the highway behind them, waiting to see some sign of pursuit. There was none. And as the distance widened between them and their attackers, Gus's vibe of being hunted slipped away, slowly replaced by a bone-deep weariness. Their escape had been the most physically taxing thing he'd done in, well, forever. Day faded to evening. The clouds parted, revealing broad strokes of pink. The metal floor rattled against his arm, which served as his pillow. Gus rocked into a doze, the truck bed alive underneath him. Dreamy sequences scrolled through his sleep-loopy mind of screaming runners thundering.